Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The battle of words between Ohio Governor John Kasich and billionaire businessman Donald Trump in the Republican presidential primary continues. Yesterday, Kasich appeared on ABC's This Week and discussed Trump's divisive nature.
We need a leader that brings us together, not a leader that's separating us one group from another.
Does that mean you would not support him if he were the nominee?
Well, he's not going to be the nominee.
Joining us in the studio for our weekly reporter roundtable, Bureau Chief for the Ohio Public Radio, State House News Bureau, Karen Kassler. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Good morning. Happy Monday.
Thank you. And also state and local government reporter for Bloomberg News, Mark Niquette. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
And by phone, State House correspondent for the Associated Press, Julie Carr-Smythe. Welcome, Julie.
Thanks for having me.
Let's kick it off with presidential politics. How can you not? Governor Kasich does well on the morning shows, right? Mark Niquette, we were talking about that before we went on the air. He always seems to be popping up on one or the other of them. What do you make of this war of the words and his decision to start coming out, you know, with his, with his dukes up?
Well, it's interesting to see how it'll play out. I mean, you know, on some levels, Kasich really has nothing to lose by doing this. I mean, the governor has been, you know, polling at about 2-3% nationally. Obviously, his focus is on New Hampshire. But even there, you know, he's been sort of jousting, you know, with Chris Christie and some of the other folks he needs to compete with for votes. So, you know, he sort of started his campaign with the idea that he wasn't going to be critical of other candidates. He was going to be sort of the positive candidate. And this shift in strategy, sort of calling out, you know, Donald Trump as the front runner and even Ben Carson, you know, in terms of are they qualified or not qualified to be president, you know, what does he have to lose? I mean, it could, you know, it's not been successful in the past. Other candidates have tried to take on Trump and sort of, you know, he you know, retaliates and they essentially, you know, fall a little bit in the standing. So there is a risk in doing that. But, you know, he's really, I think, trying to, you know, this could help differentiate him or at least give him a little bit more boost, you know, in terms of this crowded field. What's unclear is, you know, what impact this is going to have on Trump, because, you know, what he's saying isn't necessarily new or what other people haven't said or aren't even thinking in terms of, you know, why is Donald Trump leading the polls for the Republican nomination, someone who, you know, has no government experience and, you know, says all these things and that, you know, on their face are not true. And yet, you know, people still seem to want to support him. So, again, we'll see how it plays out or what impact it has for Governor Kasich.
I do think this is Julie. Mm-hmm. I do think that this plays in quite well for Kasich because of the fact that he really wants to make this key argument that he is the adult in the room, that he's the person with the experience, he's the person who knows world leaders, who has been in Congress, and this experience and adult in the room factor is really the most resonant when you're talking about Trump, because Trump is increasingly seen as being so sort of off, you know, off the cuff and making remarks that are kind of shocking people. So I think that it plays quite well for Kasich.
Well, Cokie Roberts made it really clear on NPR this morning. He says things that are patently not true, but he continues to hold his own in the polls. I wanted to ask you, Karen Kassler, about the idea that Governor Kasich wants to remain the adult in the room. But he treads a very fine line, does he not, when it comes to him? Because when I'm listening to him on ABC's show this weekend, he's sounding like John Kasich, who likes to, you know, get grouchy and say what he thinks and doesn't necessarily – isn't keeping that even tone.
Well, first of all, I'd like to note that Donald Trump called her Cookie Roberts on Twitter this morning, which I thought was kind of interesting. But anyway, and said that she was completely wrong, which we've gotten used to Donald Trump saying that everyone's
saying
completely wrong.
Yeah. When they say that he's wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but I think Kasich, you know, I was on another TV show last week with a person who's in Kasich's campaign, who's been along with Kasich on all of these trips that he's taken in his presidential campaign. And He's still trying to do the adult in the room. He still wants to do that, but his tone has gotten more aggressive. He's definitely stepped out of the mode of not wanting to criticize others by saying, I believe these people need to be called out for what they're saying and what they're doing. And you know, certainly his super PAC is doing most of the calling out and doing most of the really aggressive stuff. But you do see Kasich doing some of this. Like yesterday on This Week, he was questioned several times. He was getting interrupted a lot. And I think that's where you heard the grumpiness in there, because nobody likes to get interrupted, you know? Well, but he wasn't answering the direct question, which was, would you support Donald Trump as the nominee? And he just kept saying, he's not going to be the nominee. Well, would you support him if he is the nominee? And that's the question that kept coming back to it.
Well, Governor Kasich does not like to answer hypothetical questions. He's well known for that. There's very little that he's ever said he would do hypothetically.
Well, and I think there's also this idea of whoever the nominee is, the party has to stand behind the nominee. What if the nominee is somebody on, you know, that people don't want to stand behind? And I think, you know, you have some people on the Republican Party leadership who are saying, what are we going to do here if Trump is the nominee? Is that, how are we going to go forward with that? And I think Kasich is among those who's saying he's not going to be the nominee and trying to make that a mantra here. He can't be the nominee. He's not going to be the nominee.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. We're talking, as usual these days, presidential politics. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Karen?
And I should say that there are plenty of people who do support Donald Trump. I mean, you've seen
the
polls. There are people, and you know, they're very serious in their support. So, you know, I think they feel like we're making fun of them. We're attacking them. I'm a reporter. I'm telling people what I'm hearing from other people in the party.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is definitely an in the party thing, I think, more than anything else.
Yeah, I think Karen's right. And sort of that outsider appeal that we see in this cycle is real. I mean, if you talk to Republicans and in particular Trump supporters, like, you know, Trump was here for a rally on Monday, so you get a chance to talk to some
of
the folks.
And you were at that rally.
Right. And you talk to some of the people who were there, including people who drove hours to be here and stood in line for, you know, extended time to get into the hall. And, you know, what you'll hear a lot is they just don't care about a lot of the criticisms that are brought up about Trump. They don't care that he doesn't have government experience, because their view is, you know, we've elected people who've had government experience. What has that gotten you? Where has that left our country? And they like the fact that he's sort of out there with his rhetoric. They think, you know, sort of the attitude, we can't do any worse than what we have. Let's try something different. So he appeals in that level. But what's interesting about the Trump phenomenon is, you know, a lot of these folks will call themselves Republicans or even conservative Republicans, and ideologically they just don't care that Trump takes positions that they're completely opposed to, really, or otherwise would be. But something about the persona of Trump, you know, cuts through and appeals to them.
I think too, and I've called some. There's this idea of the angry voter out there, and I don't necessarily think these voters are angry, and that's an insult. It's more there are people who are angry because they don't like the way things are going, and they're thinking about people like Ben Carson, like Donald Trump, like Carly Fiorina, and even like Bernie Sanders, because they feel like these are the people who might be able to get things done when the traditional, more establishment candidates would not be able to. So I think there's a real undercurrent of I'm frustrated, I'm angry, I don't like the way things are going. And that's why I think you're seeing some of these candidates lead and really pop.
And Julie Smythe, it seems like there is a thin line between criticizing the candidate in this case and criticizing the people who support that candidate. And the people who oppose Trump have to watch that, right?
Yes, I would think they definitely do. I mean, I guess for me, there was sort of an epic battle last week between Trump and Kasich online. And I believe that John Kasich is at a position in this race where no press is bad press. I mean, to have a big flurry of activity where Donald Trump is attacking you on Twitter is still being talked about on Twitter, which, you know, most people in the country don't have any idea who he is. So just being mentioned by Donald Trump,
uh-huh,
is being followed by everyone, is kind of a good thing for Kasich at this moment.
Yeah, I think the governor's people were a little disappointed with the Trump rally because there was this big buildup of this is going to be a war of words between Kasich and Trump. And it had continued, as Julie said, online and Twitter before the rally. And, you know, the Kasich campaign staged pre-events. They had a conference call with Ohio supporters blasting Trump. They had an event at the convention center before the speech with veterans, including Colonel Moe. And when Trump got up to speak, he took a shot at Kasich early in the speech, saying, "Well, your governor's only polling at about 2%. I hear he's going to drop out." But then he really sort of didn't say anything. And I think the Kasich people were hoping that he would go after Kasich a little bit more strongly, and that would give a little more, like Julie says, a little more boost for Kasich and attention. And as it turned out, you know, the Kasich campaign tried to say, "Well, Trump backed down. We smacked the bully in the face, and he wouldn't play." But really, I think they probably would have benefited more from a political standpoint if there
had
been more
of a fight.
There's
no such
thing
as bad publicity, in other words, right. Just to get his name out there. Perchance, Trump's people are wily and they understand that, and they've told him, "Hey, slow down. It's not worth it."
Don't you think there's a point at which maybe Trump is not really serious about being president, and he's just having an awful lot of fun, and he will turn that machine in favor of the person that he decides should be president.
Hmm. There's some power there for you. Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Just a couple comments. Mm-hmm. I've noticed on a lot of this criticism that's going on in the Republican Party back and forth that the issues of people that talk against Trump are about personality, but Trump's support comes off of the actual issues that concern a lot of the working people, and that revolves around their jobs, their incomes, trying to be and law-abiding, and his touching upon illegal immigration. There are only two, him and Cruz, as I recall, who are against the illegal immigration. And then there's also the free trade bills, which the working people think have just hammered their job prospects and job income. And so the Republican candidates against Trump are talking personality, but Trump supports coming because of issues, which they won't even discuss except that they oppose the sides that he's on. And I'll take the answer off the air.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve. So issues, I mean, he is pretty clear cut. They're going to build a wall. We know what he knows but he's going to build a wall.
It's the don't know how part that I think a lot of people, you know, you can bring up issues, but how do you solve these issues? What is the path toward finding a solution for these issues that are brought up? And I think that's what some of the criticism has come about with regard to Donald Trump is you say you want to build a wall. How? You say you're going to have Mexico pay for it. How? And I think these are some of the issues that people get a little bit concerned about. You say you want to monitor Muslims. How? You know, I mean, these are kind of some of the issues that I think, you know, when you start talking about the criticism, I think it's the how and the details of it that people get concerned about.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it also gives an opening to, you know, critics like Kasich to say, well, OK, you're scoring points on an issue like illegal immigration. And people think, you know, like the caller said, you're the only one who's out there really fighting for it. But when you look at his proposal, what he's talking about doing, in particular, rounding up, you know, the 11 million undocumented immigrants and, you know, essentially sending them out of the country, and just the practicality. And Kasich's talked about this a lot on the campaign trail. Just, you know, you can't do it. You can't just round up all these 11 million people, send them to the border and kick them off the buses, I think is what he says on the trail. You know, so you see the other candidates talking about illegal immigration, but it's in terms of more practical approaches for how do we actually address the problem in a way that we can really do something about it other than just say something that sounds good and maybe connects with people but ultimately is not something you could ever enforce.
We will continue our conversation about presidential politics, particularly as they pertain to Ohio Governor John Kasich, when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. We're talking presidential politics right now. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check out our Facebook page and post a question or a comment there. I'd love to hear from you. In the studio with me today, Karen Kassler of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau and Mark Niquette of Bloomberg News. With us by phone, Julie Carr Smythe of the Associated Press. Their endorsements are a big issue, and Mark Niquette, there was an important one for Christie in New Jersey. What's going on?
In New Hampshire, actually.
I'm sorry, New Hampshire.
Right, of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
Yeah.
The union leader in New Hampshire over the weekend endorsed Chris Christie, which isn't necessarily a predictor of who's going to win the nomination there, but carries some weight and, you know, could be problematic for John Kasich, only because you know, this endorsement for Christie sort of appeals to the same kind of voters that Kasich needs to land to be successful in New Hampshire. And the endorsement sort of singled out Christie as the best choice. I think the editor who made the decision said he was looking at the governors. He thought, you know, we needed somebody who has that kind of executive experience, and landed on Christie after the Paris terrorist attacks because of his experience as a U.S. attorney and his ability to handle that issue in particular. So we'll see if it plays, you know, any kind of role in the actual outcome in New Hampshire. But it comes at a bad time for Governor Kasich as he's trying to ascend as we get closer to the actual voting in New Hampshire. And again, he's sort of appealing to the same kind of voters that Chris Christie would be. So any boost for Christie, you know, particularly after these Paris terrorist attacks, would sort of cut against Governor Kasich.
Well, Christie's at the junior varsity table in the last debate.
I think he makes the big table this time December 15th.
All right. So he's still in the race.
Yes.
No question about it.
Well, and I wonder, I mean, December 15th is a lifetime away, but also not that far away. So I wonder if anyone else will drop out between now and then. You know, there continue to be rumors that Governor Kasich is running out of money, that he's going to drop out. But again, after sitting there last couple of days doing another show with somebody from the Kasich campaign, it sounds like he is in it at least until New Hampshire and beyond, but definitely till New Hampshire, which is February. So,
you know, Julie Carr Smythe, as I mentioned earlier, John Kasich is no stranger to television news programs. He's on every weekend, it seems, on one or another. And yet it doesn't seem to move his poll numbers very far. But again, there's lots of sound bites and this and that going on. But other than that, it doesn't seem to change anything. Are people just not watching TV, or what's going on?
Well, I think television, is a different factor in this cycle. It's becoming somewhat more of a fractured market, because some people watch the network, some people are watching cable, some people might see him on Fox. And the other night, about a week and a half ago, he was going to make an important statement on immigration on, you know, 5 seconds of cable TV. Well, how is anybody going to happen to see that? In the same way, even the last GOP debate was not on my television in Worthington. I had to stream it online. So not everybody's cable provider even has some of this stuff. So TV is a very interesting, evolving medium this particular cycle. It may be the last cycle that it's a really huge factor.
Fred in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Fred.
Hello. I think we all remember that big event when Reince Priebus made Trump sign a pledge that he will support the nominee in order to keep in the debates. Isn't Kasich in danger of being kicked out of the debates if he doesn't sign a similar pledge?
That's a good question.
And Donald Trump has even, I think, kind of backed off the pledge at this point, saying that he's still not ruling out
running as an independent.
If I believe he worded the pledge something along the lines of, if the candidate is doing what I think the candidate needs to do, then I would be supportive. But if not, I could still get in the race. I don't know.
Which leaves the field wide open.
Well, sure.
I think that what we're seeing right now with the candidates is that, of course, they're all going to support the ultimate nominee.
Really?
What they don't want to do is they don't want to make it look like they're supporting anyone but themselves right now because they're all trying to win. But I think that I just can't see them not getting behind whatever the whatever nominee makes it through in favor of Hillary Clinton, you know, as they try to beat Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. That being said, I do think that I predict there's going to be some attempt to pressure the RNC to narrow this field. The field is just so large and chaotic still at this point.
Oh, do we have eight or nine? Nine?
Yeah, I mean, we've had at least four drop out, according to my Sweet 16 poll that I'm keeping.
Yeah, I mean, I think technically Kasich did sign the pledge that the RNC circulated. I think it was after the first debate, you know, committing to support the nominee. And even in this interview on Sunday with This Week, he was kind of cagey about it in the sense that he didn't come out and say, I will not support, you know, the Republican nominee if it's Trump. Essentially, what he kind of dodged the question by saying, well, he's not going to be the nominee, so, you know, we don't even have to go there. But what's I think going to be interesting, particularly as it relates to Trump, is, you know, what happens if, you know, he wants to continue this ride. Let's say he does see a diminishment in the polls and he doesn't want to leave the stage. Does he resurrect this idea of running as, you know, independent candidate or a third party candidate or whatever? And he's kind of floated this already because there was some press last week about how a group of donors were going to get together and essentially focus on trying to take down Trump with some kind of advertising campaign. And Governor Kasich has actually been involved in this, too, because his super PAC said it started to get other donors from other presidential campaigns wanting to contribute to the effort that the super PAC, the Kasich super PAC, was making to target Trump. You know, the idea that, OK, if you're a serious Republican and you want to win the presidency, you better get behind this effort to take down Trump, because that's the only way, you know, the Republicans are going to prevail if they can make sure that Trump isn't the nominee. So what'll be interesting is in response to this sort of, you know, insider Republican effort to take down Trump, Trump's response was, well, this isn't fair. If the Republican Party is going to do this to me, I'm not beholden to stick with the Republican Party. I'll have to think about a third party. So if it gets to that point, that would just really, you know, throw a wrinkle into the whole cycle.
Because it would split.
Obviously, yeah.
Obviously split the vote. Fred, thanks a lot for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Pete in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Pete.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to make a quick comment about Kasich. Seems to me that he could take off. He hasn't moved the polls, as you said. However, he needs to get out there and catch the imagination of the American people. And how does he do that? He has to get involved in some issue that the public is fired up about. For example, if you want to win as president, you're going to have to get the Hispanic and the black vote. We all know that. And the Democrats think they've got that all tied up. Well, what Kasich could do is pull a Clinton trick and try to get in the knickers of the the Democrats, and get out there and march, for example, with the Black Lives Matter movement and say, hey, they shot this poor black kid 16 times. That's wrong. We were against the My Lai incident. The Republicans stand for the poor people. We want to make it better for the poor people. Now, if he would get out there and march with those black people in Chicago, hey, he would get national attention. He would have the spotlight right on him.
Oh, he'd get national attention. Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that one.
What's the pros and the cons of that?
Well, I think he's always tried to position himself as a moderate. I mean, he talks about Medicaid expansion, which he fought Republicans in Ohio on that. He talks about wanting to help people who are living in the shadows, as he says. But I mean, his background, as Democrats are going to tell you, is very, you know, strongly conservative, pro-life. You know, he speaks out a lot about these core issues. So I don't see him departing dramatically from the Republican Party's basic platform issues. And so I think he's been trying to, this whole adult in the room thing, try to be seen as a moderate in that area. But he's still a conservative. Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing he'll tell you.
Julie Carr Smythe.
Yeah, I think that Kasich has tried a lot of different ways to insert himself into the national conversation. I mean, he came out with a huge foreign policy speech. He's talked about his strategy for tackling ISIS in somewhat more specific ways than some of the other candidates. And I, you know, I'm not a political consultant. I don't know why it's not grabbing on. He's fairly popular here in Ohio, which is a big state, but you know, I think he's making small inroads everywhere he goes. He's trying to go to South Carolina and New Hampshire and Iowa and meet individuals and hope that it catches on. You know, he spent 18 years in Congress. He was really a national figure at that time. So I don't know if people know and remember him and don't want him to be president, or if it really is a name recognition problem.
I think he tried to find an issue that would fire people up with the whole balanced budget amendment. I mean, that was what he started.
Which we're not hearing much about.
Right. But that was what he started his campaign before, yeah, his official campaign, was going right around and talking about this. And I think he was hoping that people would get on board because it was such an issue that was in his world and in many people's worlds very easy to explain. You have to balance your household budget. Why wouldn't you have to balance the federal budget? Which, of course, budget experts will tell you there's a lot more behind that than just that simple explanation. But I think he was hoping that that would be the kind of thing that would propel him up front and make him the adult in the room, the moderate, the one that wasn't talking about social issues. And it just – it hasn't taken off for him.
Yeah, and I think that is ultimately in this particular – race, it becomes kind of a wonky issue compared to somebody who's just, you know, criticizing people's hair and their weight, and you know, the discussion is, and the way that the debates are structured with so many people in the race, is very difficult for people to keep track of all the people in the race, period, let alone, you know, to really grab on.
How much of the African American and Hispanic vote is really out there for a Republican candidate at this point in the game, Martin Niquette?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You would think not a lot of it, particularly as we're talking about the early primary states like Iowa, you know, which is a heavy evangelical base of Republicans who show up to caucus there. In maybe more so in New Hampshire, where you can have independents or, you know, even Democrats voting in the Republican primary if they want to. Certainly not in South Carolina, I wouldn't think. So, I mean, that's also one of the things that Kasich is trying to deal with as a candidate. I think what he's trying to do is sort of be positioned to be sort of the alternative to Trump and Carson, you know, if and when they fall. I mean, we've all been sort of expecting, you know, the latest controversy would be the one that does Donald Trump in, and it just doesn't happen. He still stays strong in the polls. So Kasich wants to be sort of, you know, the candidate that everybody looks to if, you know, they've you know, turned away from Trump or Carson or the front runners in the field right now. And he's trying to walk this fine line of appealing to the conservative Republicans who will be voting in these early primaries with issues like the balanced budget. He, you know, rolled out this budget plan where he you know, promised to balance the federal budget within his first two terms, within 8 years if he's elected. So balance, pushing those kind of issues, but also as a way to even blunt some of the issues that would turn off the more conservative primary voters, like Medicaid expansion or issues that, you know, the more conservative part of the base just doesn't agree with. So, again, Kasich's trying to sort of position himself as be the alternative if and when the electorate looks away from Trump, and be appealing not only to the conservatives who will be voting, but also these independents and others, maybe more moderate type voters, particularly in New Hampshire.
So it's more about trying not to offend them in the process of getting through a Republican primary.
And be, you know, have broad enough appeal to win, particularly in a state like New Hampshire, where you have the opportunity to appeal to more than just sort of your hardcore right Republican voter.
Well, I think that there are inroads being made in the Republican Party generally to not necessarily change course on policy, but simply to highlight some of the ways in which the party believes it is attractive to the African American vote. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a huge justice reform going on right now in the country that's bipartisan, that has to do with shrinking prison terms and reforming that system, making it more cost effective, which is something that roots to conservative budget, you know, bean counter types, and also to, you know, get some minimum sentencing out. I mean, the state that really did that was New York under George Pataki, you know. So I think that some of these Republican reforms on that kind of stuff might resonate.
Scott in Hilliard, you're on the air. Hi, Scott.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to see if any of the other panelists had seen and would comment on. The Dispatch had a really interesting article on the front page of the Insight section yesterday about climate change and where the candidate statements had been evaluated in a blind evaluation by eight climate scientists, and then essentially judged or scored in, from 1 to 100 in terms of truthfulness or accuracy about climate change. And I didn't know if any of the other columnists on your panel today had seen that and had any thoughts about it.
I saw it, and Republicans didn't even make the top three or four, I think.
It was written by my colleague Seth Bornstein at the AP. He's our science writer, and I thought it was really interesting. To some degree, the climate debate is, goes on a scale of liberal to conservative, which was reflected in those scores. Mm-hmm. In other words, the more conservative candidates scored lower, and the more liberal ones maybe scored higher. But I think the point that he was trying to make was that there are hard facts here that are out there that are being discussed inaccurately, very widely.
Well, and that whole idea of facts, it seems like there are people who have their facts and other people have their facts. And so you see a lot of people on the climate change issue as well as some other ones who want to dispute the facts. They don't believe that the facts are being reported appropriately, that they believe that the actual numbers and facts go way beyond what we've been recording over the last, you know, couple hundred years. And so I don't know that it really hurts Donald Trump, Ben Carson, and Ted Cruz, who had scores of 15, 13, and 6, respectively, mm-hmm. if it really hurts them with their constituencies that they were graded so low when it came to climate change statements. A lot of their followers kind of think that may be okay.
Well, once again, that's great for the primary if indeed that's what the standard bearers, you know, of the voters think. But
right.
It doesn't bode well for a general election.
Right. I think that's why. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Julie.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say Jeb Bush was in the Republican scored the highest in terms of accuracy, which could help him in a general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and to your point, Ann, I think that's why you see candidates like John Kasich sort of trying to play a middle road or almost both sides, where he'll take a position that says essentially, I believe climate change is real, but I'm not sure to what extent human activity contributes to it. And ultimately, you know, we want to address climate change, but we don't want to do so in a way that hurts the economy or throws a lot of people out of work. So it's sort of this position that, you know, doesn't offend too many people who are really conservative and don't believe this whole climate change stuff, mm-hmm. while also not completely alienating the people who really think this is an issue and want to see our presidential candidates addressing it. You know, we'll see how it plays out after the primaries, obviously.
Scott, thanks a lot for that call and bringing up that AP article that was published in the Dispatch over the weekend. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking presidential politics, lots to talk about. 614-292-8513 if you have a question or comment. With us by phone, Julie Carr-Smyth, State House correspondent for the Associated Press. Karen Kassler of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau is here in the studio with us, as well as Mark Niket of Bloomberg News. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. org. Julie Carr-Smyth, I wanted to get at something that you wrote about last week. It was about the Governor Kasich's office and its role in abortion restrictions that were added to the 2013 budget bill. You wrote that activists and editorialists across Ohio called on him to veto the provisions. He said, hey, you know, I don't really have anything to do with it. We'll look at it when it gets to my desk. Kind of stayed neutral on it. Your article suggests or just it points out and shows the facts behind what really went on.
Yes. As it turned out, publicly, you know, the governor's common stance is we don't comment on active legislation.
Right.
He was going around, and he has, as generally for about 5 years, John Kasich has really been able to remain somewhat aloof from and not have to own some of the abortion restrictions that have definitely had impacts in Ohio. We've seen about half of our clinics close. A lot of these are administrative in nature, or they're kind of these obscure budget amendments. And in this case, the documents that I reported on showed that members of his administration had been helping hone the language. They did not initiate the language, but they did help craft it. They worked on inserting some of the state regulations into a draft bill, and those regulations had been getting more restrictive due to work inside the Ohio Department of Health. So there were emails back and forth. There were draft bills among high-ranking members of his office, including his policy person. I'm sorry, his boards and commissions cabinet secretary, and also his legislative people and his lawyer.
Why is this important?
Well, it's important because in some ways, as I say, he has not necessarily affiliated himself with the abortion changes that have happened. And it shows that, you know, he was working and is working. I think it signals to people he is working with the legislature, and a lot of the things that are coming through there are not coming through there without the knowledge of the governor's office. I would say very few things are coming through there. I mean, we are a state now that's run by a Republican governor and Republicans in both the House and the Senate, and they are different branches of government, and it's not as if, I mean, I was told by experts that it's quite common for a governor to help out. I think that it just brings to light the fact that he was saying publicly that he did not really know what was going on, and people were turning to him to veto that. And in fact, it had been known by his office close to maybe a year and a half before it emerged in the budget.
Mm-hmm. Kieran Kessler, you're nodding.
Well, I don't think it's a surprise that when he didn't veto any of this legislation, he's always made it clear he's pro-life and he wasn't going to veto it. And I don't think, while it's really interesting to read about this stuff, I don't know how surprising it is for some people in terms of that this has been his policy all along.
Well,
he doesn't talk about his role with the legislature, but certainly there's an interest in this legislation.
Well, anything to do with abortion is highly controversial.
Absolutely.
No question about it. He has clearly said, though, at the time, we're going to wait till it gets to my desk.
Sure.
I don't know. I'm just going to wait and see what happens when it happens. Very much try to take a neutral stance when, in fact, they were working on it. Does that kind of a thing, Mark Niket? I mean, is it just too fine of a line to is it just for insiders or what?
Well, I think what's interesting about it is, you know, how the governor is trying to position himself on this. I mean, to some extent, it's not unusual because Julie's right. His stance is, well, I just don't comment on legislation. I won't say whether I'll veto or sign until I see the final product. But he clearly has wanted to avoid sort of being identified as, you know, a strong, you know, proponent of opposing abortions here. You know, he's clearly said, look, I'm pro-life. I've made no bones about that. And he's very clear about that. But he also doesn't take the next step to really embrace some of the anti-abortion provisions And, you know, as Julie pointed
publicly,
out, publicly,
least.
Right, you know, maybe behind the scenes they're doing that. But, you know, I guess the governor has decided that for whatever reason he doesn't want to be seen as sort of, you know, a leading advocate against abortions. I'm not phrasing that just right, but you know what I mean? It's he wants to be sort of seen as someone who clearly, you know, is pro-life but is not extreme on that issue.
Right, and remember that this was coming at the time that this heartbeat bill was being heavily pushed by a particular faction of the anti-abortion movement. It would have been one of the most restrictive abortion limits in the country at that time. I think another state or two has passed something similar since, and we have not. And so in some ways, depending how you look at it, in by putting these particular restrictions into that budget, maybe they were able to satisfy the pro-life folks in the Republican caucuses and keep the heartbeat bill from becoming law, which may have been what he was trying to do.
614-292-8513 is a number to call. What do you think about the abortion issue when it comes to presidential politics for Ohio Governor John Kasich going forward? Otherwise, he'd be a lame duck governor and it wouldn't really matter. But now that he's in the race for the presidency, it does matter. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. In the meantime, I wanted to turn to another issue as far as presidential politics go, and that is the governor's and many other governors' decision to say that they refuse to take in refugees from Syria. They, of course, don't have the power to do much about that, although the federal government said, hey, don't worry. If you don't want them, we won't send them to you, but they could if they wanted to. Ohio supporters of Syrian refugees have kind of pushed back on Governor Kasich about this issue. Karen Kassler, you know, that's, again, it's another fine line.
Right. And I think, you know,
and Joe Moss, who's a frequent panelist on Columbus on the Record, had a letter to the editor in the paper today.
Right. I think a lot of the Republican candidates are taking this stance. You know, it kind of serves the purpose of opposing the federal government, you know, because that there seems to be a little bit of a current of that. But also there's a real fear among people who are very concerned that somehow, you know, certainly not all of the the overwhelming number of refugees would be completely safe and good to have here. But then there's the worry about the one that somehow somebody could mix in with that group. And I think that the candidates are really seizing on that concern and that fear and bringing that up. And you know, certainly Kasich's not the only one. And he was one of the first governors, I think, to come out. And he's in a unique position in that he is a governor. And you do have him and Chris Christie now that Bobby Jindal's out. And I think he and Christie are the only ones
the rest
left.
Are former.
Yeah. So, you know, it puts him in a unique position in saying the state that I manage, we don't want these refugees here. But like you said, there's not a whole lot they can do about it if that's the course of action that's going to be taken.
And this is an interesting issue because even beyond, you know, the candidates who are running for president, we have sitting governors who aren't running for anything anymore. You know, they're either term limited or they're at the end of their careers, whatever. And they're still out there saying, you know, we're not going to accept these Syrian refugees. And some of the rhetoric is couched in terms of, well, we don't want to accept the refugees until it's proven that the screening process is thorough enough and the vetting process is such that we're not going to allow somebody to slip through the cracks. So it's not couched in terms of we're just not going to accept refugees because you're right. And I mean, there is no way for a state to, you know, refuse to accept a refugee. In fact, it's even more, you know, it's worse than that from the standpoint if a state, you know, is just going to refuse to cooperate with the settlement of Syrian or any other refugees. What it means is it just makes life harder for those refugees who are settling in your state because it means the state's not going to cooperate in terms of, you know, getting the kind of assistance that's available for housing or education. You know, because typically the way the process works, the federal government decides if a refugee should be allowed into the country, does the screening and the vetting.
Which can take years.
Exactly. In the case of Syrian refugees, you know, they're saying maybe 2 years before any of these refugees could actually come here. So one, they decide whether somebody should be legally allowed into the country. And after that happens, you know, you're allowed to go wherever you want. Essentially, you're a legal citizen here, and you can go. You know, we don't have, you know, restrictions from state to state. And what happens is we have about nine non-governmental organizations that assist with the resettlement of refugees. So they'll meet and decide, okay, where is the best place for this legally accepted refugee to locate? In most cases, that's going to be with a family member who's already here, a community of immigrants who have settled somewhere, like the Somali population here in Columbus. That make sense for the settlement, or someplace makes sense because there's medical treatment available that's needed, or education, or employment opportunities, whatnot. So when the decision is made about where to locate, it's going to be for the interest of the immigrant and the refugee. So if the state's taking a position, well, we're not going to cooperate. And normally the state would work with these, you know, government agencies, non-governmental organizations to help settle the refugees. If they're not going to cooperate, that just makes it harder for the refugee to get settled.
And I think Kasich and others have talked a little bit about, it's not that we, and we heard this debate also in the Ohio House a couple weeks ago when they were voting on a resolution. Mm-hmm. It's not that we are not compassionate. It's not about compassion. It's about security. And so you keep hearing that message, too, that it's not against the refugees. It's against the terrorists who we are afraid are going to be among the refugees. And that's a really, it's a very hard decision and line to kind of argue there, you know?
Well, they keep saying they're worried about the security process for allowing the refugees in, which, as we mentioned, at the very least is a two-year process. It's very, very detailed. But no one ever really says what it is about the process that they don't think is adequate.
Well, I think some of the details of the process have been kept secret on purpose.
Yeah.
So that, you know, people don't figure it out. And so I think, yeah, it's hard to criticize the process when you don't know all the specifics or you can't talk about all the specifics. But all you can say is, I'm concerned about the process because there are these very dangerous people out there who we don't want to get into this country.
And the people who oppose this will point to, you know, one of the attackers in Paris had a Syrian passport, and it might have been a fake, but at least there was some suggestion that, you know, this terrorist might have tried to use the refugee process to infiltrate the country, and couldn't that happen here? And the FBI director has made some comments too in the past about concern about available documentation for Syrian refugees,
right. Which has been the problem with refugees. Political refugees forever.
And again, the people who support the process would point out that since 9/11, we've had like 850,000 refugees come to this country. And if your concern is about terrorists infiltrating, you know, that kind of flow, I think only three have had any kind of arrests for terrorist-related suspicions, and clearly, you know, no terrorist attacks.
And many of them that have been arrested for terrorist-related activities have been homegrown. I mean, they're from here.
Exactly. And that's the other point, is that if you're really bent on creating a terrorist, you know, attack, perpetrating a terrorist attack, you know, the easiest way is not to pose as a refugee coming into the country. There's other ways to get into the country if that's your aim.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that there is an element of this whole debate that, you know, you're trying to prove a negative a lot of times because you're looking at what doesn't happen versus what does. And, you know, in the same way that so many things are averted, you know, say in airports every day or in small ways all over the country, at immigration stations and things. And these are the kind of things that really don't have statistics to go with them because they are things that don't happen that might have happened, but don't, you know. And so I think that that just becomes sort of a more difficult thing about talking about this. Using facts.
You know, John Kasich did take a different tack as well in response to all of this. We only have a few minutes left, but and that was he stepped back from this, but it was an interesting policy proposal to have sort of a system of sharing the benefit of the Judeo-Christian or some way of spreading Judeo-Christian values.
The agency that would be created to with the clear mission.
He just went a little too far there because he pulled back.
Well, like I've said this a couple of times. Those were in his remarks before the National Press Club. This was not an off-the-cuff thing.
Right.
This was written down. And then later he started to back off that saying, well, I was talking about consolidating some agencies. We need to promote the way that we believe, like ISIS is promoting what they believe, you know, and you know, you could almost see how that what happened that he said this, but the remarks were written as a clear mission with an agency with a clear mission. So I thought that was an interesting choice of words that he had before the press club.
Well, that's just all the time we have to talk about that today. And I don't know if it'll pop up again. So much does in just a matter of a week. So you can join us next week for our Reporters Roundtable. In the meantime, Karen Kassler, thank you for joining us today.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Karen Kassler of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Mark Niket of Bloomberg News, thanks to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And Julie Carr-Smythe by phone from the Associated Press. Thanks, Julie.
Yes, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.
And thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.